Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Value Stocks podcast with your hosts, Felix Nothnagel and Alex Middleton. Today is September 9th, 2018, and we are talking about Coca-Cola stock, symbol KO on the New York Stock Exchange.
I guess there isn't too much that we need to say about Coca-Cola. I mean, maybe of interest is that 45% of sales are just alone the Coca-Cola brand. 70% of sales are soft drinks, basically carbonated and sugary drinks. And then the other 30% are water, juice, tea, milk, sports drinks, like those kind of things that they kind of increase their kind of market or product offering, let's put it that way. The market cap currently is $195 billion. Which turns out to be about $45.70 per share right now. Do you own any of the stock, Alex?
No, I do not.
I don't own any either. I have owned it in the past, and I think you owned it.
I have also owned it in the past, and luckily made a little bit of money. But, you know, I think it's one of those stocks that everyone holds at one point of their life. Whether it doesn't matter how far you come along as an investor. Coke always seems like a good idea when you're first into investing.
I think that's, I kind of feel the same way. I owned it, and like, you know, the more I learned as an investor, the more I'm kind of like, why do I still own this stock? I don't think the valuation is that attractive anymore.
And right.
In a way, maybe the fact that we owned it and don't own it, maybe that kind of, it's kind of an indication of maybe the things that we learned along the way.
Where we're going. Well, you know, remember when we first started, you know, talking about investing, we'd always watch a Warren Buffett video on YouTube, and the amount of times that Warren Buffett references Coke, if you're new to value investing, you just pick up and you're like, oh, it's got to be a really good company almost at any price. Mm. And there's been times where Coke in its history has been severely overpriced as good as the company it is. But I don't want to go too much into that before we get into the discussion here. But
yeah. So I guess that was a company I suggested. Did you kind of agreed, yeah, let's do that one. You said worthwhile the learnings or?
Well, there's lots of stocks that you don't revisit for a long time. And it's good to just dive back in and take a look because it is a good business, and it's worth keeping track of because you never know what type of economic situation or that would where it will be presented at good value. You know, yeah. I think that's what happened with Warren Buffett when he bought in the 80s. He's been following it for a long time, knew how good of a business it was. And it just took that one instance where the stock came down significantly in value due to a big event. And he took advantage of that quickly, or he was able to because he kept up to date with the company. Okay. So I think it's good to keep track of a lot of companies that you think are overvalued, even if they're good businesses and you'd like to own them possibly one day.
And basically learn more about them so you're ready for when the opportunity presents itself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I guess I think that's a very good point. I think I agree with that one. And then for me, like why I thought it was a good idea is I noticed there were quite a few consumer goods companies that were trading at, to me, looked like very high valuations, like P's of 25 or so. And then you look at their growth and they're like, their revenues stay kind of flat for years, and it's like, why are people paying that much money for it? Or so I thought Coke is maybe a good example of one of those many companies that go through as an example and kind of study. I guess there's many others we could have looked at, like Procter & Gamble, Campbell's Soup, or et cetera.
Certainly. And I think some of the learnings that when we go through this podcast, there's a lot of takeaways that you can apply to a lot of the other consumer goods companies that are trading at those multiples, like you suggested, because, well, when, and we'll get there eventually.
Hmm. So what do you like about this company in particular? You say it's a great company, so why is it a great company?
The history, so there's probably three main points I like about Coke that I can condense it into. One is inflation protection. So they have about 1.9 billion servings of product per day. And I would say that, you know, the range of what they sell each unit for is probably within, you know, $1 to $2. And when you to add in the 3% inflation to the cost of that, it's not very noticeable for most people, I don't think. I mean, I remember looking back when I was like 10 or 15 years old, I remember on the vending machine when a 250 millimeter can of Coke went from 50 cents to 75 cents. And I was like, oh, wow, it went up. And you still bought it regardless, right? It was only an extra quarter. I mean, it didn't seem, you know, oh, that's a lot of money, but you still paid it, right? So I think that's one of the biggest things I like. And it's a product also with a long history that is ingrained with into people's minds that they grow up with, and it's there. And it's not even, I mean, they've done several taste tests with Coke versus, you know, Pepsi or Virgin Cola, and it's still, you know, Coke is not necessarily the best flavored item when you put people to a blind test, but still it people prefer it when they see the brand name because there's some sort of other feeling that comes up to it. So the brand is very powerful, and there's over 100 years of brand power behind that I thought. Another is technology disruption. It's hard to imagine how technology would disrupt Coca-Cola. It's unless, you know, people like, I don't know, yeah, you just can't do it. It's like chewing gum, like Warren Buffett says. It's, you can't envision a way where technology is going to disrupt a can of Coke.
Yeah, of all the companies that I kind of have in my mind, I think Coke is the most likely product still to be around in 100 years from now. Which, right. I think, okay, 100 years, you can be like, who cares? But I think 20, 30 years, that matters. And I think there's a lot of companies where I don't know if they're, like, I don't have 100% confidence level or 99.9% confidence level that they'll be around in 20, 30 years. So if they're not around in 20, 30 years, you're kind of like, well, are they going to fail 5 years from now, 10 years from now? So you might be end up holding the stock when it's just all of a sudden their economics goes really south.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important point about Coke. Just the durability of the product and them being around. Was there anything else on this company? Or,
well, the one thing that I think people have a tendency to overlook in terms of one of the things Coke has done really well is their logistics and partnerships throughout the world. You can go to the smallest places in the world and there's a Coke in a small little convenience store that's in the middle of nowhere. And developing that network and the relationship with partners that can make sure that there's Cokes in all those different spots, I think it's almost a mode in itself, and it's something that for a startup who's selling Monster or any other beverage, it's very hard. The distribution system, and I think people have talked about, I think Richard Branson even talked about it when he was doing the Cola Wars back in the 90s, and the power that Coke has to have their product on the shelf, placed in the shelf of the convenience stores is really hard to get in and compete with.
I heard an interview with him where he said, like, Coke basically told the all these convenience stores and supermarkets to kick this Virgin Cola out of the shelves. So for them, it was really hard to stay in the market, and eventually they just gave up. So I would say, yeah, Coke has a phenomenal distribution network, and they have the shelf space in all the stores.
Yeah.
And like a lot of supermarkets that I go in, you see Coke products and Pepsi products. You pretty much don't see anything else. There is smaller players sometimes that come in, like Monster or so. But at the end of the day, they're actually really happy if they can kind of get a contract with Coke.
Right.
Like Coke buys the whole, takes over the whole company, or Coke buys shares.
Right.
Like, yeah. I think Monster, they own partial ownership. Mm-hmm. Some other ones they buy outright. But they're smaller players, so it's very hard to really grow into the behemoth that Coke is.
Yeah.
And building that kind of distribution network. So I would agree that's a huge advantage for Coke. I think they have great brand power, great marketing. Like, any kind of event that kind of you relate to happiness to? Is it like the World Cup or Disneyland or like a concert or anything? Basically, Coke is there. So Christmas, the advertising suit. So for people, it's they have like a strong kind of connection between things that make me happy and Coca-Cola. So
yeah,
that's a few of the things where I think Coke is just phenomenal.
Let's not knock it too much because it is. Well, I love Coke. So yeah. It tastes good. I'm looking over on your counter and you got about 8 sitting right there.
And but they're Coke Light, so.
Oh, okay. So they're healthy,
less
right?
Sugary.
They're painted green.
Yeah, less calories.
And I guess one of the really important part that I like about the company is the margins and the return on assets, double digits. Well, before they bought Coca-Cola Enterprises, the bottling division, you know, they went down a bit when they bought that because it's more capital intensive, that business.
Yeah.
But they should be going up again now that they've refranchised all the those bottling operations.
Mm-hmm.
But just selling the syrup, they produce really good margins, and that's obviously something that's very attractive.
Yeah, I agree. Great business model, great margins, capital light.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we covered all the kind of advantages of Coke or like the things that we like. I think we mostly agree on all the big items on this. What about the risks of Coke or what do you not like?
Well, I think number one is the price, which we probably go into more in the valuation portion. It's, you know, in the past 10 years, it's been fairly low growth. But the multiple on the stock is huge,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and we can go on and on about of why that is, and I think we'll talk about it more. But the other thing I don't really like about the stock, or more about the company actually, is management. I think Coke is a terribly simple business to just keep on running,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it has so much success ingrained to it. Already, you know, it's hard to screw up something as good as Coke from 100 years of branding. It's a powerful brand. You don't really have to do much to keep that cash coming in and distribute it to shareholders. But often, or more often than not, you know, if you put someone in charge or give someone a CEO title, or they're going to get that job because they want to change something or they want to do something, right? People want to hire people who want to make change. No one's going to hire someone who says, yeah, I'm just not going to sit in the chair and just let Coke's brand do the work and we'll just keep on taking the cash and distributing it to shareholders. That doesn't sell someone a management job or, mm-hmm. right? So I think looking at Coke's history, they seem to do deals that don't really make sense. Like, I'm still struggling to understand the most recent one with them buying a coffee chain. Anyways, so that's one of the other things I don't like about the stock as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have like 3 points. One is price. Second is a struggle for growth. And then, third is like a little bit the health consciousness of consumers creeping in, and that kind of relates, I think, to their struggle of growth.
Right.
So it's just people buying less Cokes in probably more of the developed countries, and then they're probably selling more Coke in like China and India, and I think that growth will continue. But yeah, those are kind of the points. I think it's this company is in a way a prime example of like a really good company not necessarily making for a great stock. Just if you cannot pay an endless high price for the stock just because it's a good company. I think in 2000, Coke traded at the exact same stock price as it does today.
Right.
Even so, it was at a PE ratio of about 70. So the business has done fine. But if you're paying too much, then the PE multiple comes down. But basically, your return is non-existent.
Right. And that's a big lesson that most investors learn over time, that value is a function of price.
Yeah.
Eventually, at some point, you can't just blindly pay whatever.
Yeah.
for anything, even though the underlying asset is good.
Really, not too many downsides. I think biggest one's price. I think we agree on that one as well. I guess then if we're going a little bit more in the details, management, you kind of touched on that.
Kind of touched on that. A little bit too hyperactive. Sometimes I wish they would just sit there and not really change the formula. Not necessarily the exact formula for Cope, but don't do deals for the sake of doing deals.
Yeah. It's a little bit hard to say. I think the new guy, James Quincy, came in at the end of 2016, so it's been as CEO for a little bit over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess his big one is like the refranchising of bottlers, which means they've been franchised before.
Right. Well, I think it was always their envision when they bought Coca-Cola Enterprises was to refranchise them eventually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't pay attention to that.
So they bought it for, I think, $13 billion in around 2010, and with the intention of kind of doing what they needed to do and then refranchising them.
At the time, I read that they were saying, okay, yeah, we're buying this bottler and it'll give us more control over the business, and we'll have $400 million in cost savings. And now they come back and like, oh, we're going to refranchise it and we're going to have $800 million in cost savings. At some point, it's kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, you cannot tell me like buying it creates shareholder value, selling it creates shareholder value. I think on average, with all these transactions, they're destroying shareholder value. It's probably they're better off not owning the bottlers, in my opinion, higher margin business, but...
Yeah, I would agree. Ideally, they would never get into the bottling industry, and I can understand if they... I mean, I think they've done this even in the 80s, where they buy underperforming or perceived underperforming bottlers and then tried to fix them and then resell them, but who's to know... I don't have enough insight to tell whether they actually are improving them or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think big organizations do this a lot, the insource work, outsource work, and I think it actually has more to do with when somebody needs to create initiative for themselves and create work and
flavor of the day.
Flavor of the day, right? Yeah. What do I need to sell to management to keep my job going or whatever, right? Yeah. So whatever, I'm happy that they've refranchised the stuff now. That seems good, and hopefully their margins will pick up again. And
they will.
Yeah, they will.
But their sales will decline, obviously, and it has shown to decline already. So
yes.
But does it affect the earnings potential that much? I think not immediately. It'll probably kind of even out kind of on a per share basis.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe in the long run, it'll help. I feel another point is it's a little bit of a bloated organization, Coke. Like a lot of the consumer staple companies.
Yeah.
Like they never have to compete that hard or for survival. Like a car industry or oil and gas or something like that. So it's just like cost creeps in and another department gets opened and another department gets created.
Yeah.
I think when you look at what 3G does when they buy these organizations like Budweiser or Kraft Heinz, like how much like cost it so quickly take out of the business, you can see how these companies have a lot of cost in there. To me, it's like almost not a negative in this case because it's like ideally it's baked into the share price, right? So it's more like an opportunity. You can take cost out, but it's like a one-time thing where you can increase earnings.
Yeah.
But it's not really like it doesn't affect like long-term growth in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where I feel the kind of past Coke management has not really shown an indication of taking out that cost, or like they always say it. You know, it's like lip service.
Right.
New manager comes in. So now this new manager promises to like zero cost budgeting. But in the end, are they really going to do all these cost savings? He is an insider. I would think these costs would come out of the business a lot more likely if like 3G bought it. So
it is. It's really hard. Yeah, it's really hard to make change in a big organization that's established. Like, you're right, you know, that because it's been successful so long and they have huge margins, it's always easy to sneak in a little new department here and justify it. But it's always hard to cut anything out because you've got people on the job already established in that position. And
the CEO was the company for 20 years. How many friends does he have?
Oh, exactly.
In this company, right?
Yeah.
Like, will he cut their jobs and say like, hey, your department's no longer needed?
Psychologically, it's really, really difficult to do. So, well, we'll see.
There are planning layoffs and cost savings of like $800 million, so that might increase their normalized earnings potential. Yeah. But I guess overall, it's like, I don't know. It's not a management where you say like, well, this guy will provide a lot of additional shareholder value.
No.
I don't see it.
The only change I could ever see that would be significant on Coke is if 3G managed to buy it one day. Mm-hmm. And I think at today's price, that would be hard
to figure that out. And I think I saw an interview just a couple of days ago with Warren Buffett where they were asking him if he would want to be interested in buying Campbell Soup because there's a investor, like I think Dan Loeb or so, activist investor, who's saying, hey, we need to sell the company. And Buffett said it was very hard at current multiples to pay a premium to buy consumer goods.
Well, they'd have to pay a huge premium to convince the shareholders to buy out. And
I don't know, 20-30%. And I think he thinks they're already all quite expensive. I think 3G just sold some Kraft Heinz shares.
Oh, did
they?
So
they took cost out. They made the company a little bit more valuable, but I don't think they see the long-term growth there. So
Well, they're going to want to redeploy that money sometime.
Yeah.
In the near future, I suppose.
I think one other thing about management is like they reward themselves quite richly at Coke.
Right. Yeah.
It was like, I think 2014, they had the whole new compensation plan, and Buffett abstained from vote. He didn't vote.
Which is huge because he's never done that on a board before.
Usually he is with the management, and for him to abstain is basically saying no. But he didn't want to be, I guess, stir up too much publicity and stuff, so he abstained, but he wasn't happy with it. So I think that's a negative for me on management here as well.
Yeah, and to me, and I mentioned to you before, it's like, you know, Coke should be a pretty simple business to run, and therefore lots of people should be able to run it. Mm-hmm. So maybe management shouldn't be rewarded quite so high. you reward based on outperformance and unique abilities that you're bringing to the table, and anyhow.
Well, that's generally, I guess, not always the case, right? Was it like the bigger of a company you're running, the more money you typically are being paid?
I
agree with you. It should really be on performance based. What's the return for the shareholder?
Yeah. But we know how it works generally.
Mode and competitors. I think we covered pretty much everything on management. I have nothing else.
No, nothing else to add there.
Yeah, mode and competitors.
Well, they certainly have a good moat, and we've talked about that being like their logistics and their ability to command space in supermarkets, whether it be a grocery stores, Walmart, or Costco. The history, the brand power, it's there, and you can see it in the pricing of their product.
Very strong moat. I think Buffett had a test or so. He's saying, like, if you give somebody $100 billion and say, go out and hurt Coke's business, and you're kind of like, I can't do it. That's a good signal of indication of a very strong moat.
Right. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I don't think too much else to be said about that.
No, I think everyone would agree that it has a strong moat. I mean, that's the typical example anyone brings up when you start talking about moats and the definition of a moat.
And I think that's also a huge reason why so many people own this stock.
Because, right.
Yeah. Growth and free cash flow use.
Well, growth. So I think we both agree that there's not going to be a lot of growth with in the beverage industry. It is really competitive industry because there's always a new product that's coming on the market, and if it poses any threat to Coke or Pepsi, or it's an area they want to get into, then they buy it. But that usually those companies are quite small in the grand scheme of the entire beverage industry, so it doesn't really add too much in the way of sales or margins over time.
Maybe just because of the size that Coke is already.
Yes.
It's hard to kind of grow into that many more new markets.
Right.
And, you know, in North America, how many people already drink Coke? They're more likely to reduce their Coke consumption. Like off the product of Coke, maybe they switch to a Coke water or a Coke tea or something.
Right.
But it's hard to get them to buy more Coke products at this point, I think.
I think we've reached the pinnacle of Coke consumption, at least in North America.
Saturation.
10, 20 years ago,
Well, I looked at their numbers, and basically their revenue growth or so was kind of slow there. But even more importantly to me is like the unit case volume, which is how they measure basically how much product they're selling, right? And not, of course, they also increase their prices. So that's also providing growth. But just the volume they're selling. And over the last 10 years, it grew by 2.3%,
right,
which is not terrible, but it's not fantastic. 2.3% annualized. Over the last 3 years, those unit case volumes have stayed completely flat.
Right.
So it's kind of, when you're kind of looking at evaluating the price this company you should pay for Coke, then you want to look at, are they going to grow their sales, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe staying flat in sales volume is probably too pessimistic, I'm thinking. But I think 2% or so, I don't see much more growth. I packed it somewhere between 0% sales growth just on volume to 4% being on the very high.
Right.
And I think 2% is reasonable because, we are consuming less Coke in like developed worlds, but I think at some point it will kind of become to an equilibrium. It will not continue shrinking.
It's not going to go down to zero,
and
there'll be a settling point for it somewhere.
Yeah. And you have a lot of other markets like China or so, where I think over time they'll sell a lot more Coke.
Yeah. I mean, in low growth is not the end of the world with Coke. I mean, zero or negative growth is a problem. But I mean, as long as it grows
stable
and keeps producing the cash flows, that's what makes it a really good investment. And as long as those cash flows grow with inflation over time.
I think that was my assumption.
Yeah.
I said like 2%.
Mm-hmm.
Revenue growth from inflation.
Right.
I think that's kind of reasonable. I don't think they will really grow their sales, like increase their prices quicker, higher than inflation.
Mm-hmm.
What about free cash flow?
I mean, they obviously produce a lot of it, and a lot of it goes towards the dividend.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, if their stock was priced more at a rational level, I would prefer stock buybacks. Mm-hmm. But when you have, you know, I think it's trading way above a good value, it doesn't make sense to really be buying the stock back at those levels. Even though I think last year they still bought back $1 billion worth of net shares after options are granted. It's hard to say because you don't want them taking that $5 billion and what else are they going to do? Like we said, there's not the heck of a lot of growth that's going to add value to Coke as current market cap. So they can't really internally invest that money to provide a better return. So the only other option is dividends.
Yeah. I think the dividends have grown at 6.7% over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's anyways my calculation. Dividend per share at 7.7%. The difference is basically due to the share buybacks.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that is a little bit misleading, that 7.7% growth in dividend. I think that's not, they can't maintain it because their payout ratio has kept going up.
The payout ratio has gone from 50% to, I think,
it's
this past year it was above 100%, but compared to earnings. But it's artificially grown.
Yeah. Either they start growing their revenue and profits much quicker than they have in the past, which I don't think they will, or the dividend growth rate and like money that they spend on share buybacks, that kind of growth rate that will decline, or no, it will not grow at the same rate.
Yeah.
So like when I look at it right now, they're spending, it kind of every year keeps going up, but right now they buy back shares for $6.5 billion. Mm-hmm. They spend another $3.5 billion on share buybacks. That's $10 billion that they spend currently, and I don't think they're making $10 billion in cash from operations. I
mean, no,
they are making roughly $10 billion in cash from operations, but they also have CapEx expenditures.
Right.
So to me, they're already spending more money on share buybacks and dividends than they're actually bringing in cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that to me, it's not, they can't maintain that forever.
Yeah.
So to me, that's a problem. And yeah, I think their dividend growth rate will start declining. Maybe even their PE ratio will start contracting because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, oh, like why does my dividend only grow by this much? So to me, kind of, people haven't quite noticed that yet, that their payout ratio keeps increasing. So it's like, oh, my dividend increases every year by 6%. So the share price goes up by 6% every year. And I'm getting paid out a dividend of 3%. So my return's 10% annually. And that's what Coke kind of did roughly over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Kind of, you got a return out of it of 10% per year.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of questioning if that kind of...
Well, there's a lot of people who would invest in Coke and similar companies, and they just look at the dividend yield,
mm-hmm.
and that's their premise for why they invest in certain stocks, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, there's going to be some people that are a little bit surprised
when that kind of
hits the fan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When that doesn't grow as much anymore, and then everyone's surprised, oh, what is Coke management doing? Why are they not increasing the dividend?
That's
so
when they'll notice,
And then, oh, by the way, the PE is starting to contract,
mm-hmm.
and then your whole return on the stock doesn't look as attractive anymore.
Yeah.
I guess this kind of led us a little bit into valuation already, this
mm-hmm.
discussion of the... of the free cash flow use and their gross kind of possibilities. Do you want to start? Or?
Yeah, so basically how I evaluated, I kind of went backwards. I took the 194, 195 billion market cap it is today and tried to figure out what multiple I'd be willing to pay for Coke based on that cap. So I think for me, it would be between... say 15 and 18 multiple based on what I think the growth and how they could allocate cash to investors over the future. You know, so if you were to pay a multiple of 15 on the current market cap, that would equate to a free cash flow of almost $13 billion. Okay. Which I think we can both agree they're not at. That's not going to be their normalized cash flow going forward. So it's significantly overpriced. And if we assume that they're going forward, free cash flow is $8 billion, and you want to pay a multiple of 15, then that means market cap with appropriate market cap to start looking at Coke would be $120 billion,
mm-hmm.
approximately. So I think you know, their 2018 target for free cash flow is $8 billion. I think they revised it down from 8.5 earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's what it's going to be going forward. But I don't think I would start looking at Coke until it got to around that 120 market cap level,
mm-hmm.
As a potential investment, and very unlikely to invest at 120 billion. It'd have to be somewhere below that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the way I looked at it, you get about a 3% return from dividends, and you get a 1% return from share buybacks. And so it's funny because they spent $3.5 billion to buy back 80 million shares pretty consistently over the last 3 years. but then the shares outstanding only reduced by 40 million a year. so you know, a billion and a half or so kind of goes to the employees and management of that money. So then you're left with only like a kind of 1.5 billion spent or so, like reducing. So 1.5 billion on a market cap of 190 billion. So you're a little bit less than 1% of shares outstanding being reduced.
Right.
So that'll give you an annualized return of 1% from share buybacks plus the 3%. So you had 4% return.
Yeah.
Annualized. And then it's like, how much do you get in gross? So I said probably between 0 and 4% for the volume gross. And I said 2% from inflation. You mentioned 3% earlier, so somewhere 2 to 3%, but let's say 2%. So that's about 2 to 6% in gross. So as the earnings grow by 2 to 6% a year, so should the stock price, basically. So then you get your 4% plus 2 to 6%. So I got, at current stock prices, you get about a return of 6 to 10% annualized. That is over the next 10 years. If in 10 years your P ratio is exactly the same as today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the risk on that. So if I take my 6 to 10%, I'm saying, oh, most likely the volume growth will be 2% per year. So I'm getting about an 8% return for the next 10 years if my PE ratio stays the same. Now, if I'm thinking, hey, my PE ratio might contract by 20% or 2% a year, then my 8% return will be like 6% annualized, which might be okay for some people, might be a good compared to like a 10-year government bond. But to me, like a 6% annualized return investment is just not very attractive. So I guess to me, I was thinking same thing, 15 times normalized earnings, which I thought was somewhere in the 8 to 9 billion range, which came to 120, 100 to 135 billion. That would be like interesting to me. Maybe somebody else would be willing to pay 20 times 8 or 9 billion, so 160 to 180 billion. Mm-hmm. So still, and I see at least it should trade 10, 20% cheaper than it does right now.
Right, yeah.
And for me, it has to like lose like 1/3 or so of its current market cap, from 190 down to 130 or so, 120, to kind of make an attractive investment. I like the company. Mm-hmm. And if you're saying, okay, instead of 190, now it trades for 120, your 6% annualized return probably is going to be like 50% higher. Mm-hmm. So it will be like a 9% annualized return at that price.
Right.
So, yeah. Basically, I guess the 15 times normalized earnings, 120 billion, 130 billion market cap is kind of in the $28 to $30 a share range.
Mm.
So versus 45
today. Yeah.
Yeah, let's say 30 versus 45, roughly a third. That's when I would be kind of like, oh, this is an interesting investment. But then at the same time, if Coke would ever lose that much or become that much cheaper, there's probably a lot of other things who might be trading even more attractive.
Yeah.
So I think the odds are that I won't be a Coke shareholder for a very long time.
It's hard to envision a time where Coke will really get that cheap unless they do something utterly, management does something utterly crazy, like introducing a new Coke. Yeah. Because you're right, it's a flight to safety and during a recessionary economy. So, you know, the Coke stock holds up pretty well. Yeah. You could say excessively high interest rates might bring it down. Mm-hmm. But then again, if high rates, there'll also be a lot of other opportunities in the market as well. And it's probably worth mentioning that one of the reasons that Coke is priced so high right now is it's an alternative to investing in government bonds. Like, it's so predictable that people look at it as marginally a little bit more risk they're taking for
quite a better
return compared to a government bond. So when you're buying a Coke at these levels today, you're kind of making a bet on it, where interest rates are going to go too. So there's an interest rate risk. If interest rates go up to 5%, you're probably going to see Coke shares fall down. And that goes with all a lot of the other consumable, consumer-based product companies as well. Mm-hmm. So you really have to think about that risk going into it.
I think if you buy Coke right now, like, don't plan on holding it a year or two, because then you're really putting yourself at risk of that multiple, the PE multiple kind of getting smaller. Yes. I don't see a lot of probability of the PE multiple expanding. Like, it's for the amount of growth that you have in that company, you're already trading at a PE of like 23 or so. Yeah. Like, really, are people willing to pay a PE of 30 for this?
You never say never, but probability wise, I would bet on it going down,
contracting. Do you think it's an above average business?
Above average business for sure. And below average price.
Yeah. Less attractive.
Less attractive price.
Price-wise.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And did you rank it from 1 to 10 in terms of interest level? Or?
Currently, like, when you incorporate price and you incorporate the business economics and how good it is, I would say, I wouldn't invest in it, but I would rank it like a 5 out of 10 of interest of investing right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to buy it, but I think it's, like I said earlier in the podcast, like, it's good to keep track of companies you'd like to own where price is the issue. Mm-hmm. You know, Visa is another example. It's a great, great business, but it's very highly priced right now.
Yeah.
And so,
I gave it a 4 to a 5.
Yeah.
So likely buy, no. I guess we agree on that. Is there anything else you would want to add? Or I don't have too much. I have a closing kind of quote from Howard Marks that I think is a really good fit for this.
No, I don't have anything else to add. I think we covered all the bases.
So, then we'll leave listeners maybe with this quote here from Howard Marks. There is no such thing as a good idea or a bad idea in the investment world without a reference to price. It's not what you buy, it's what you pay. Investing is not about buying good things, it's about buying things well. So I guess that this quote kind of relates to everything investing, but it's kind of, for Coke, it's not what you buy, it's what you pay for it.
Right.
And Coke could be a really attractive investment if it was at the right price, but I think we agree, not at this price.
No. No.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And talk to you later.
Disclaimer: this podcast does not constitute investment advice. It is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Do your own due diligence and use the information provided at your own risk.